Thank you for joining me, everyone, over at Podomatic and at all of my podcast outlets. This is Charles Moskowitz doing the program Monday through Friday, 12 noon to 1 p.m. Welcome aboard.
Recording in progress.
We're now live on YouTube and all of the subscribing affiliates. Thank you for joining me, everyone. We are live on all affiliates, and I probably have, I think, pretty close to 30 affiliates at this point. Before I get into issues, I want to give out the phone number because I do take calls. This is a live program, and that number is, as soon as I get to it here, I can only have a memory for this, 617-396-4958. That number again is 617-396-4958. Now, I want to get into a subject that is really pressing on me right now, and that is this increasing phenomena of the FBI being involved in law enforcement in a way that is not appropriate, I would argue, in this country. Maybe in this case, I'm speaking as someone who happens to be a Jew, who grew up hearing about family members murdered in the Holocaust. I'm very sensitive about this. And what I read about with regard to our FBI reminds me of the Gestapo. Now, we have obviously the case, and I've talked about this, of James O'Keefe from Project Veritas, with the FBI showing up and banging down his door, yanking him out of bed, dragging him out into the hallway of his apartment building, half-dressed, handcuffing him in front of his neighbors, and confiscating all of his electronic properties. They could have called him and asked him to turn these things in. He had nothing to hide. It looks very political because he's in the middle of a lawsuit against the New York Times, one that has apparently reach the point where it is working its way through the courts. They're delaying it. They're trying to drag it out for years. They're using all sorts of tactics to make sure that the case is not heard. But nevertheless, he's gotten a lot further in our system than one would expect given the present realities. And there they are raiding his house with the claim that he had possession of Joe Biden's daughter, Ashley Biden's diary, which he didn't have. He had it briefly, didn't publish it. But that's something that reporters do all the time. They get information dropped to them from sources. That's how they work. That's what they do. And then they evaluate those things and decide whether or not it's something that's legitimate enough and legal enough for them to publish. In this case, he didn't do it. He didn't publish it. And now we have a situation where two women, both of whom I believe are older women, have had their doors battered down with battering rams by FBI agents in tactical gear because they wanted to confiscate their properties. Is this really necessary? I mean, I just find this to be troubling. I'm going to read from the 11 News KKCO in Mesa County. This was updated November 17, Grand Junction, Colorado. This is a CBS affiliate, I believe. So we're talking mainstream news here. FBI raids the homes of Mesa County clerk and recorder Tina Peters and Lauren Boebert's former campaign manager, who's, they don't mention her name. Her name, I have it in the article here. I'll get to it. Early Tuesday morning of last week, the FBI showed up with search warrants at four locations in western Colorado. Now, according to Mesa County District Attorney Dan Rubenstein, the state's attorney general's office and local authorities conducted the searches Tuesday in Mesa and Garfield counties. The court-ordered searches were part of an investigation of alleged election security breaches conducted by Mesa County officials. Now, the allegations in this case are complicated. In the case of Tina Peters, she is an elected official in Colorado, as elected to oversee elections. And during the last election, she was receiving numerous credible reports of election improprieties in that state. So she decided to investigate, and she discovered that the attorney general, according to her, and I'm not saying this, this is her allegation, was seeking to delete information from the election file after the election, which, if that's true, would be a crime. Election files are supposed to be held for 2 years after an election. So she took it upon herself to photograph the files in advance. Now, I don't know if what she did was illegal. It maybe is. But it was moral. It was the right thing to do. If you see an immoral act, sometimes you take an action, as long as it doesn't hurt anyone, that constitutes doing right, constitutes preventing theft in this case, assuming this is true. And again, I don't know because I'm not in it, but I'm talking about how this is being alleged. So here we have it almost a year later, the FBI showing up at her door with a battering ram and confiscating all of her electronic properties. It seems to me that she could have been, they could have just requested it. I mean, it just doesn't look right to me that this is how they would be conducting business. Mesa County clerk did confirm her home was searched. A statement was released from her legal defense fund early Wednesday morning, stating, quote, today, large teams of heavily armed federal agents using a battering ram to break down doors raided the homes of Mesa County Clerk Tina Peters and several of her friends and colleagues, mostly elderly women in their mid-60s. This is a level of weaponization of the Justice Department we haven't seen since the McCarthy era. Thank God Tina wasn't protesting critical race theory at a Virginia school board meeting, or they might have brought two battering rams. Yes, very, very sarcastic comment, but very apt, given the fact that the Biden administration, working with this radical public service group of representing school boards, engineered a letter to the Attorney General asking that parents disagreeing with critical race theory be called domestic terrorists, and that under testimony, Attorney General Garland denied that this is what was happening, even though the letter was written into the record, and that Attorney General Garland may have a conflict of interest on top of it all, because his son-in-law, Zan Tanner, is the head of this organization that is operating in 23 states in the school boards, and that is taking in tens of millions of dollars in public funds teaching critical race theory. So that's a bit of a side there, an aside. So you have a Mesa County clerk. Tuesday night, Peters appeared on with Mike Lindell, Lindell TV, to speak about the raid. According to Colorado Politics, Peters also spoke on Lindell's channel saying, quote, the FBI raided my home at 6 a.m. this morning, accusing me of committing a crime. And they raided the homes of my friends, mostly older women. I was terrified. She continued by saying authorities searched her home for about 3 hours and took all of my electronics, including her phone, my phone. She went on to say, you know, I refuse to give up. I'm more scared than ever because of the tactics they are doing on an innocent person who is just doing her job. According to Nine News, Lindell said Garfield County resident Sharona Bishop, Lauren Bobart's former campaign manager, also had her home searched on Tuesday. We have reached out for comment, but have not heard back. Now, I heard Sharona Bishop on with Steve Bannon on the War Room Pandemic, which is an excellent podcast. I recommend it. It's available still at Apple. Hasn't been taken down. Steve is like kicking butt over there. I mean, he's absolutely on a roll, especially after what he's going through. And she spoke about what happened. I mean, she's a gold star mother, right? Never committed a crime in her life. She was politically active, helping Lauren Boebert, managing her campaign. And she had her door broken down for reasons that are not clear. Whatever the reasons, did the FBI really need to show up with a battering ram? They kind of roughed up her daughter, who's I think she's a teenager. They took her outside in handcuffs in front of her minor children. I mean, is this what this country has come to? This is like Gestapo. It's going to get worse. This is what happens when you have a government that, I don't know, I mean, I don't want to say too much here because I'm probably already going to get taken down. Let's just say that they're concerned about criticism of their legitimacy. I'm not doing that criticism right now. I'm simply looking at this with a sociological lens, that this is how governments behave when they are concerned about such questions, and that a large number of Americans do have those questions. I'm not saying I do here. Just get it. I mean, I don't want to, the Gestapo that runs YouTube, I don't want them to take me down. Maybe I'm saying much too much today. You see, this is where we are now as a country. I'm worried about every friggin' word I say that I'm going to get taken down. I'm censoring, you know, censorship is bad enough, political censorship. But the threat of political censorship causes us to censor ourselves and ultimately censor our own minds. And the result is that we become diminished as sovereign citizens. We become frightened. We become timid. We lose our creativity. We lose our edge. And I mean, you know, unfortunately, I think that that's happening to me to a certain extent. I mean, I'm not doing the kind of programming that I hoped to be doing a year ago, maybe 2 years ago when I started this. I don't even have the energy to go on every day now because of this. I just am too worried. Every time I think about getting into a topic, I'm like, bing, a bell goes, oh, I can't talk about that. I want to have someone on. I'd like to have on a lot of people right now that I'd like to have on, for example, Sidney Powell. I've wanted to have her on for a long time, but no, she's been censored. I'm afraid to even mention her name now or even think about her. So the results of the censorship are chilling. And they are not just chilling free speech, but they're hurting our characters. They're hurting our souls. If they're hurting me, then they're hurting everyone to a certain extent. And we basically sublimate this and we, you know, it makes us passive and we stop thinking about it. And I think that that's what I'm going through right now. And, you know, now here I am sitting here, I'm sitting on Spielke. So I'm saying, oh, they're going to shut this down. They're going to shut down my whole station. I've already had it happen a few times. I'm going to turn on my YouTube channel later to see, you know, whether or not anyone's visited. And I'm going to get a notice saying, sorry, you've been shut off. It already happened to me on TikTok. I mean, I had 35,000 followers and it was shut down. I'm rebuilding on TikTok. But, you know, I'm a little bit more circumspect now. And so I don't talk about things. Now, the things that I'm talking about here, these aren't conspiracy theories that I'm weaving out of thin air. I'm reporting on news. I'm reporting on things that are happening in our government and in our country right now that are being reported by mainstream media. And yet I'm afraid that I'm going to get shut down. I just, you know, it's just, it's a lousy feeling. Anyway, I just think we need to watch to get back to the subject here. And I'm not going to say more about this. It's such an unpleasant subject. That we just need to assume that the situation with the FBI becoming a political arm of the present regime, the bully boys, is going to get worse before it gets better. It could get a lot worse. And it's becoming more open and more brazen. I think it started really with the phony Trump-Russia conspiracy theory, where they were pulling elderly men out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning, like Roger Stone and Paul Manafort, and throwing them in Manafort's case, throwing them into solitary confinement. And these are people, maybe they might have committed a crime, but they were never charged with anything before. They were not, like, these aren't dangerous criminals. They could have been simply, the government simply could have sent them a notice saying, please appear in court, and they would have. If they tried to dodge that, maybe they could have gotten visited, but not this. And in the case of Roger Stone, it was particularly odious. You know, something like 19 agents showed up in tactical gear, battery ramming his door down in front of his, this is an elderly man who's never committed a crime in his life. His wife is hearing impaired. They're terrified. They're dragging him out in his pajamas. And there's CNN on the front lawn filming the whole thing. How did they know that? How did the New York Times know about James O'Keefe's raid? You know, they had already reporting on the information practically the next day. I mean, this is hand in glove deep state stuff. I'm sorry, but that's how I see it. And as I mentioned, it's going to get worse before it gets better. And the reason I think it's going to get worse, and this is my opinion, I hope that this isn't the thing that gets me shut down, is because the regime that right now is in power knows that they're going to lose big time 12 months from now, less than 12 months from now. About 11 and a half months from now, when we have the midterm election, it's going to be a historic loss. It's going to be a landslide. They're going to lose big in both the Senate and in the House and in governor's races and in local races around the country. A good example of that is the recent special elections in Virginia and New Jersey. All right, where they lost big time. Even though New Jersey, of course, things happened that made sure that nothing really, you know, didn't look like, I don't want to go there, I'll get in big trouble. Anyway, the thing is that the Virginia, they lost big time, and they didn't want to lose that race. And because of this impending loss, I think they're trying to ratchet things up to try to stop that from happening. And they're going to do some very nasty things in the lead up to that. I'm not sure exactly what that is. They continue to push this narrative about the January 6th incursion into the Capitol. I mean, they took that poor man, that the so-called QAnon shaman, who basically, they're giving him 4 years in prison. Apparently he's mentally ill. He was probably led in there by FBI agents. I don't know that. I just think that there's a possibility. Was unarmed, not violent, actually calling for peace. He trespassed. He's going to go to jail for 4 years for trespassing. And there's some other stuff around that. I mean, people being held in a prison without facing charges. People being tortured by being put in solitary confinement and beaten in reportedly in one case, denied their medications, abused. And I think that it's going to get worse. And we're talking about hundreds of people in the Washington, D.C. prison. I think it's going to get worse. I think people are going to start to get picked up, because I think that's what happens when you have an authoritarian oriented regime, one that says things like calling parents domestic terrorists, mothers and fathers concerned about education, concerned about what public schools are teaching their children. They're teaching race theories that I would suggest are not all that different than those taught in another progressive nation in another time, that being progressive Nazi socialist Germany. And they're teaching sex education that is so vulgar and so graphic and so pornographic that the school boards are actually forbidding parents to read it in public. Yet it's in their school libraries in school. And they're teaching, you know, all sorts of stuff, you know, related to the pandemic. I don't want to go there, but, you know, parents who are critical of this and who are standing up and saying that the schools are basically taking over the children. I mean, my friend, the late, great Dr. Samuel L. Blumenfeld, the author of NEA, Trojan Horse in American Education, The Whole Language OBE Fraud, and a whole shelf of other books. He passed away a few years ago. I could just hear him now. He's a very dear friend of mine. He warned about this. He predicted this. He was like a prophet, that the schools would move in and they would confiscate our children. Not literally, they would still be coming home, but they would confiscate their minds and confiscate their souls. And that if parents objected, they would have ways of dealing with them. They have tactics that nullify those objections. I've seen this myself. I don't want to go into details, but they're trained to do it. There's actually this training lab that teaches them how to do this. It's in Bethel, Maine, that was started by, Kurt Lewin, I think. He's a psychologist in the early 20th century who was a student of Wilhelm Wundt, one of the fathers of modern psychiatry, where they train teachers and school administrators how to deflect objection to so-called change agent methodologies amongst the community and amongst parents. And they're just going to continue to colonize the minds and the souls of our children and try to keep us out. One of the benefits of the pandemic, not that there is any real benefit, I'm not saying there is, but the fact of the matter is that with children learning at home using Zoom, parents got to see what was going on in the classroom. And that's why they were reacting now, because they know the truth. They'd been shut out of the classroom. The door had been closed in their faces for decades, or for at least the last maybe 10 to 15 years. And now it was open. We have to take this opportunity to learn lessons from that, what happened. But they're being criminalized. And as I said, it's going to get worse between now and Election Day, November 3rd, 2022, because they're going to do whatever they need to do to make sure that they don't lose. These are the same people who made sure that they didn't lose in 2020. And I'm not going to go into details, but let's just say that there was a very coordinated, concertized effort to win that election that included upwards of $1 billion in dark money emanating from various people. I'm not going to name names. We all know who I'm talking about. That organized people on the street to conduct various activities. Let's leave it at that. I'm not going to get into specifics. It doesn't take much study to get to the information of what happened in 2020. 2022 is going to be the same people doing the same stuff, except it's going to be worse because now they actually control the levers of federal power and they're using them against patriots and against American citizens, against concerned mothers and fathers, against Gold Star mothers, against people who are now viewed as part of the resistance, if you will, to use an old communist term that they used to use during the last administration. So I think I probably said enough. I don't want to get into any more trouble than I'm probably already in. Let me just, if you don't mind, I would like to just mention that my new book is available, Sociology for Conservatives and American Conservative Social Theory. Sociology for Conservatives is now available as a soft cover and as an ebook at Amazon Books, I think at Barnes & Noble online, I believe at Goodreads, but probably Amazon's the most reliable place to get it. And this is my alternative social theory. I am a student of sociology. In my old age, I'm going to, back to college. I'm at Bunker Hill Community College in Boston, my hometown, where I am majoring in sociology. And one of the first things I noticed as I started to my studies there was something I didn't need to be alerted to. I knew anyway. And that is that the social science of sociology is primarily a leftist-leaning science. The main sociologists have been on the left. It has been a tool of the left in terms of the type of research it's done. And it has spawned leftist social theories like critical theory, like conflict theory, which was derived from the writings of Karl Marx, like all of the, like feminism. These all were developed by liberal and left-wing social scientists. And I realized that sociology needs a conservative social theory as a sort of a deviant, if you will, because by today's standards, a conservative view is deviant. But at least, if for no other reason than to lend some balance, to maybe get liberal social theorists to sharpen their own thinking, because I think they've certainly gotten very sloppy by contrasting theirs to a conservative theory. But more fundamentally, I would argue, and I do this in my book, which again is available at Amazon Books, Sociology for Conservatives, I would argue that conservatism is natural and normal to social theory because conservatism is true. It's based upon reality, unlike a lot of these other theories, which aren't, but emanating from those identifications of truths is an emphasis on that which is best and that which is good and that which is moral in human society. So it's a positive theory. And I would argue, and I do in my book, that conservatism itself is not an ideology because conservatism is natural. Conservatism is true, you know, in every sense. And if there's something that's untrue, it's not conservative. And that conservatism upholds the development of ideas and institutions that support truth. And at the same time, one of those truths is a great paradox, which is that human nature and human beings are not perfect. Only God is perfect, or only nature is perfect, if you don't believe in God. And you can be a conservative without believing in God. I get into that in my book. But given that imperfection of human nature, the fact that we cannot perceive everything, we cannot know everything in the universe, we are limited physically, mentally, spiritually. We are images of God in the religious sense. I would say that concept can be viewed from a secular sense as well. So given that fact, we have the paradox of establishing ideas and institutions that improve our lives, that advance our characters, that improve the moral tenor of our societies. But at the same time, we recognize that imperfectibility, which means that we always understand that all of our ideas and our institutions are subject to corruption, of falsehood, of evil, frankly. And so we set up a system by which we can continue to examine them. Now, in the political sense, that system is best expressed today in, at least by idea, the American system of checks and balances, of balances of power. And that system of checks and balances transcends just mere government. It transcends, you know, the fact that we have three branches of the federal government and that those are checked by the powers of the states and that the states in turn have three branches of state government and those are checked by the local municipalities and counties and that those municipalities and counties have two or three branches of government and that all of this whole ecosystem of political checks and balances serves to blunt what would otherwise be naked power and corruption, because each is trying to advance its own interests and jealously protecting its own interests, and that those interests clash with the other interests of other areas that are trying to expand their interests, so they all keep each other in check. And that the result is, however imperfect, that we, the citizen under God, is able to retain a high degree of sovereignty and our rights under God, who is the ultimate sovereign and to whom all power derives, not the state. So, the idea of conservative social theory, I think, is manifested in the political sense in the American system. Anyway, I get into this in my book. Obviously, as a new author, I want people to check this book out. I think it's still free on Kindle. I'm looking at the page right now on Amazon. It says it's still free on Kindle. I think that usually when you first publish a book, they make the first X number of copies free on Kindle. So I don't know. I'm not saying this for sure. I don't really know this, but it looks like there are still a few free copies available on Kindle. But the book is available both on Kindle and as a paperback. Makes a good stocking stuffer. Conservative Social Theory, Sociology for Conservatives, by yours truly, Charles Moskowitz. So please check it out on Amazon Books. I'll put a link up to it on this site after I'm finishing up here right now. I want to thank you all for joining me. I also have a good article about the history of Thanksgiving on my Medium blog site. You can check that out at Charles Moskowitz at Medium or at charlesmoskowitz.com, which has a link to my Medium blog. But please check out my book. I'm a new author here. This is my new book. So naturally, I'm hoping to get this book into circulation and, you know, get people talking about the fact that there is such a thing as a conservative sociology and that it can become, hopefully, ultimately, this could spark the beginning of a new branch of sociology, a conservative theory. And, you know, I'm not trying to toot my horn here, but I think there are a lot of people that are a lot smarter than I am who will hopefully use this as a little bit of an outline to really develop conservative social theory, because we need conservative social theory right now in this country more than ever. This country is a conservative country. Conservative social theory is the very basis of who we are. We just need to wake up and recognize that And I'm saying this to liberals as well, because under the ideas of conservative social theory, you could be as liberal as you want. You could be a communist if you want. Go set up a commune in Vermont, right? In fact, I'm right now starting to write a sequel where I'm going to get into that. Because conservatism is what is. It's what's real. It's not an ideology. It doesn't force you to believe anything. It sets, conservatism is like a football field, right? A football game. The rules are set. The goalposts are set. The teams are set. The whistle blows. And then it's each man for himself within the context of those rules. Anyhow, or as my late grandmother used to say, anyho, I want to thank you for joining me this afternoon. Please check out my new book, Sociology for Conservatives, an American Conservative Social Theory. I hope you all have a wonderful and happy and healthy Thanksgiving season. And God bless you all. God bless America. Let's all stay strong. Let's stay Boston strong. Thank you.
Recording stopped.
Technology called holoportation, a mix between teleportation and holograms. With this, I think you could run a country from your basement.
What you see right here, this is Portal. It's the size of a vending machine. It fits in the corner of a room, and it beams in a 4K resolution image in real time. You can you can beam anybody from anywhere to anywhere in real time. And when you're looking into the camera, you're looking into your audience's eyes. So if you're an educator, or if you're a politician, or if you're an inspirational